The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello and welcome to our December 2025 edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. Now, if you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in this program. This program is all about books available from the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. Now, the library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library also has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. And if you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information at the end of this program about that as well. Now, this month, we're going to look at some of the most popular books checked out in the month of November at the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. We begin the program this month with a look at a book called The Edge of Honor. It is a new thriller by Brad Thor, and I'm going to be reading from a review by Ray Palin that was done just this year in July 2025, right after the book was introduced. It is hard to believe that Edge of Honor is Brad Thor's 24th novel featuring American hero and patriot Scott Harvath. It feels like it was just yesterday that I was blown away by the opening installment, The Lions of Lucerne, which is still my favorite book that Thor has written, says Palin. Here's the plot. Harvath is a newlywed. He and his wife, Solvi, have just finished 6 months of globetrotting purely for pleasure before returning to life in the high-stakes spy service for their respective countries, the United States and Norway. Now, during their lengthy honeymoon, the newly elected president has promised to clean up the political landscape, but thus far has only heightened the level of criticism from his opponents and those who did not vote for him. Couple that with a series of deadly explosions outside the vice presidential residence, and you quickly realize that something big is at play here. With domestic terrorism, external threats from long-standing enemies like Russia, and a growing faction of online terrorism, Scott Harvath definitely has his hands full in a situation that is far more complex than he expected while still being firmly planted in our current world. The new regime has decided to cut the Secret Service protection provided to members of the previous administration. Now, this has some of them on the run to the point where dangerous and well-armed killers are hunting them down, even invading the location where the ambassador to Norway resides in Washington, D.C. Solvi is called into action to help protect her home country's representatives, while Harvath is tasked by his employers, the Carlton Group, with finding whoever is behind the very precise and personal attacks being made against current and former political figures in this country. Harvath builds a formidable team of trusted allies around him, but is shrewd enough to see that there is a major conspiracy reaching the highest levels of government. Internal hate groups, including white supremacists, may be involved, along with those who are obviously trained special forces and make up the bulk of the threat to the peace that Harvath must correct. There aren't many authors in this genre who truly have their pulse on the machinations of the global political landscape like Brad Thor does. With domestic terrorism external threats from long-standing enemies like Russia, and a growing faction of online terrorism, Scott Harvad definitely has his hands full in a situation that is far more complex than he expected, while still being firmly planted in our current world. Edge of Honor delivers. And that was read from a review by Ray Palin in July of 2025. It's a brand new book called Edge of Honor by Brad Thor. Now let's take a look at another book that's also reviewed by Ray Palin in the same month, actually, July 2025. This one is called The Hamptons Lawyer, and it's by James Patterson and Mike Lupica. James Patterson teams up with Mike Lupica for their third entry in their unique and highly suspenseful Jane Smith series. The book's titled The Hamptons Lawyer may be quite matter-of-fact, but the circumstances are not. Defense attorney Jane Smith, a resident of Long Island's famous East End, has been fighting a mostly losing battle with throat and neck cancer. She realizes that she could die at any moment, yet she continues to throw herself into her work. No case has confounded and challenged her more than her defense of Long Island's rich bad boy, Rob Jacobson. Now, this is the third time that Jane is defending Jacobson, who is on trial for yet another triple homicide. He swears he is being framed and being in the pocket of mob boss Sonny Bloom in much the same way that his father once was, does not make this an easy task for Jane. However, Jacobson claims that Bloom and his influential colleagues are setting him up to be the fall guy for the murders of a married couple and their teenage daughter. It is for this reason only that Jane is continuing on as his counsel. She is determined to see that justice is done for this family and that the actual killer goes down for it, even if it ends up being her own client. Assisting Jane, as always, is Hampton's bar owner and ex-NYPD detective Jimmy Cunniff. He has direct experience with Bloom and his entire racketeering organization and provides much-needed backup security and detecting aid to Jane. While she is mentally zoned into this case and also dealing with her terminal illness, her veterinarian boyfriend, Ben Kalinske, proposes to her. Jane gives him a firm no, indicating that a wedding needs to be a happy event, not a sad one where everyone knows the bride has a short expiration date. Meanwhile, a hitman for the Bloom family is out there and waiting for the green light to take out Jane and Jimmy. We witness a trail of bodies that have been left behind from his various hits, and he indeed means business. Well, as the case begins to ramp up in intensity with several verbal battles between Jane and the prosecution, events outside of the courthouse continue to provide more reason for her to worry, as some individuals either directly tied to the proceedings or potential witnesses unexpectedly die. And, adding fuel to the fire, Jimmy personally serves Bloom a subpoena to appear at the trial. It's a dangerous ploy that may come back to bite Jane and her defense strategy. The Hamptons Lawyer is a great beach read that is unpredictable and hard to put down. Even though Jane is gambling with the Grim Reaper, the novel ends with a terrific cliffhanger that hopefully will open the door to a fourth installment in this engaging series. The book was reviewed by Ray Palin in July of 2025, and once again it's called The Hamptons Lawyer by the very popular James Patterson, along with co-author Mike Lupica. Now let's move on to another new novel. This one is called Unscrewed, and it's by Lois Grimman. Here's the plot for this one. L.A. homicide detective Jack Rivera has a killer body, a wicked smile, and a velvet touch. Just ask Christina McMullen, the cocktail waitress-turned-psychologist, has handled obsessed patients, love-struck drunks, and her own guilt-tripping mother with aplomb. But when it comes to the lieutenant, Chrissy has an old-fashioned case of irresistible attraction, until things turn fatal when Rivera is accused of murder. Now, not only was Rivera found unconscious next to a dead woman, but the victim was his beautiful ex-girlfriend who left Rivera for his wealthy dad. Now, Chrissy detects a few father and son issues here, along with plenty of evidence that her would-be boyfriend is guilty. But when she starts looking into the dead woman's past, a rich senator's connections, and Rivera's relationship with his mother, will she discover there's hope for her and Rivera after all? Or will her curiosity have deadly consequences? The only way to find out the answer to that question is to read or listen to this book, Unscrewed, written by Lois Griman. By the way, that's spelled G-R-E-I-M-A-N, Lois Griman. Now we have a kind of an unusual situation here on this program. There is, and this is very timely, of course, a new Christmas trilogy of books that has been written by Hope Holloway and Cecilia Scott. Now, book number one is called Asheville Christmas Cabin, and number two is called The Asheville Christmas Gift. And book number three is called The Asheville Christmas Wedding. Well, what is coincidental and has not happened before on this program, but all three of these books by Hope Holloway and Cecilia Scott were in the top 10 most popular books this past month, the month of November, at the State Library in Raleigh, the Accessible Books and Library Services Division there. So kind of unusual, but obviously very, very popular books. So I'm going to read each one of these, one right after the other, starting with the first one, book one, The Asheville Christmas Cabin by Hope Holloway and Cecilia Scott. The first of a charming, heartwarming holiday series that will whisk you away to a dreamy winter in the mountains. With sweet romance, strong family bonds, and an uplifting story of hope and joy, this is the perfect Christmas collaboration between two beloved women's fiction authors. When the Chambers sisters receive an invitation from their jet-setting aunt to spend the entire month of December at the family's cabin in Asheville, North Carolina, they have one question. Why? Well, the retreat tucked into the Blue Ridge Mountains may be the site of many happy childhood holidays and summers, but it also holds some sad memories as well. The sisters and their aunt have spent 25 years avoiding the cabin and renting it to strangers. Why would Aunt Elizabeth want her dearest, darling nieces to put their busy lives in three different states on hold and spend a month in the mountains? Eve, Angie, and Noelle, triplets born on Christmas Day, owe their very lives to their aunt, and they agree they must go. Once there, not only do they learn to let go of the past and embrace a bright future, they all start to see their lives in a new way. Big city girl Noelle comes face to face with her first love, and feelings for this single dad are strong, tempting her with a small-town lifestyle that she never imagined she'd embrace. Eve, a stressed-out mother of three, revels in the change of scenery and begins to learn the art of letting go of complete control. And when Angie's rocky marriage truly cracks, she finds a new kind of joy with a connection to the past and a reconnection with her daughter. Can one Christmas in Asheville change everything? Join these strong, funny, and loving women as the holiday spirit lifts them as high as the Blue Ridge Mountains and promises a whole new life ahead. Again, this was called the Asheville Christmas Cabin, and it's book number one in the Carolina Christmas Trilogy. Now let's move right into book number two in the Carolina Christmas Trilogy, The Asheville Christmas Gift by Hope Holloway and Cecilia Scott. The forecast for Christmas is chilly, with a chance of major life changes for three sisters who have been brought together by their aunt. The month in Asheville has already opened the women's eyes to new possibilities, and each of the sisters must make major decisions this holiday season. With her daughter joining the family at the cabin, Angie faces the fact that her marriage is over, but has no idea how or where to start again. Noelle can no longer deny that the boy she once loved is now a man she could love again, although it would mean giving up her big city life and exciting New York career. Eve and her husband discover an opportunity that would upend their comfortable lives, but might bring them immeasurable joy. Can one Christmas in Asheville change everything? Well, join these three funny and strong and loving women as the holiday spirit lifts them as high as the Blue Ridge Mountains and promises a whole new life ahead. Once again, that was book number two in the Christmas trilogy. The Asheville Christmas Gift is what that one is called. Now, I'm going to move right into the third book in this trilogy. And this one is called The Asheville Christmas Wedding. So we'll find out the results of some of the things talked about in the first two books here. The conclusion of this very heartwarming holiday trilogy will whisk you away to the dreamy winter in the mountains with these wonderful authors. When the Chambers sisters receive an invitation from their jet-setting aunt to spend the entire month of December at the family's cabin in Asheville, North Carolina, they have one question, which is why. Now, the retreat, as I mentioned earlier, is tucked into the Blue Ridge Mountains, maybe the site of many happy childhood memories and summers spent enjoying the beauty of the area and each other. But it also holds some sad memories. The sisters and their aunt have spent 25 years avoiding the cabin and renting it to strangers. So why would Aunt Elizabeth want her dearest darling nieces to spend their time a whole month here in the mountains? Eve, Angie, and Noelle, triplets on Christmas Day, owe their very lives to their aunt, and they agree that they must go. Once there, not only do they learn to let go of the past and embrace the future, they all start new lives there. Big city girl Noelle comes face to face with her first love and feelings for this single dad. They are strong, and they're tempting her with a small-town lifestyle that she never imagined she'd embrace. A stressed mother of three, Eve revels in the change of scenery and begins to learn the art of letting go of complete control. And when Angie's rocky marriage truly cracks, she finds a new kind of joy with a connection to the past and a reconnection with her daughter. So this particular version of this book, this is the end of the three-book trilogy. It's called The Asheville Christmas Wedding. And it was written by Hope Holloway and Cecilia Scott. And as I mentioned before I started this, all three of these books were in the top 10 most popular books at the Accessible Books and Library Services Division of the North Carolina State Library. So if you haven't read it or listened to it yet, I suggest that you do that. It's a perfect time of year for a great Christmas series. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately, a monthly presentation from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. Thanks so much for joining me today. appreciate your tuning into the program. Right now, let's turn to a book by Steve Barry, one of the most popular authors in the mystery genre. This one is called The List. Readers of the long-running Cotton Malone series will be in for quite a shock with Steve Barry's latest release, The List, a standalone novel that is by far the darkest story he has ever written. As I turned pages, I was reminded of how I felt when I first read John Grisham's The Firm, though Barry's novel is far more devious and deadly. The prologue begins with this very telling and spine-chilling line: "Killing old people was like shooting bottles off a log." However, it is not necessarily the elderly who are in danger here. Anyone who poses a financial threat to the Southern Republic Pulp and Paper Company are at risk. The first cruel and heartless murder occurs when a man posing as a hunter seeking assistance for his friend who had injured himself in the woods ambushes an elderly gentleman who is willing to help them out. This would-be Good Samaritan ends up being killed and is dumped in the lake to float down Brooks Creek. We then meet our protagonist, Brent Walker, who is returning to Concord, Georgia, where he grew up after having spent the previous 10 years working in Atlanta. Brent is happy to be back as he needs to care for his mother, who is not doing well 2 years after his father's death. Now, he has been hired by the Southern Republic Pulp and Paper Company as its assistant general counsel and is coming on board just in time for union contract negotiations. On the other side of the table is the man who once mentored him, Hank Reed. Now, it should be a straightforward process, but something odd and unsettling happens to Brent. A woman he doesn't know approaches him. She urges him to read Proverbs 22, verse 3, and states that God have mercy on him. Brent later learns that she is the widow of his predecessor, a young man who allegedly took his own life. The picture becomes clearer with the introduction of Christopher Bozen, who is quite ill and realizes he may not have much time left. As such, he has decided to shake things up and attempt to atone for some really bad business with which he has been involved, business that has left blood on his hands and those of his two colleagues, Hamilton Lee and Larry Hughes. The three of them are the brain trust behind the Southern Republic Pulp and Paper Company, with Bozen acting as the money man. They are discussing the state of their business, with the primary topic being the controversial list that their head of security and Bozen's team are responsible for checking off. Some years earlier, in the face of rising costs and competition that was driving their business into a potential financial disaster, Bozen, Lee, and Hughes came up with an unorthodox way of handling the situation. They targeted recent retirees as well as current employees who were running up medical costs due to personal and family illnesses. Their solution was to physically eliminate them one by one. Now, Hughes and Lee are nervous, as they never really liked Bozen and now get the impression that he might not be on board with their agreed-upon priorities to stay afloat and competitive. Bozen has kept his serious health issues a secret from his partners and devised a plan to try and expose them. He embeds the list into a file that he knows Reed is going to access during the negotiations. Sure enough, Reed shares this information with Brent. Once they put together the murderous magnitude of what they have uncovered, they realize that they could find themselves on this very same list if they do not tread carefully. The concept of the list is nothing short of brilliant, and the suspense that Steve Barry is able to infuse it with is simply blood-curdling. I really enjoyed seeing him step away from his Cotton Malone series to bring us something from the dark side of his extremely formidable imagination. And this is written from a review by Ray Palin that was done in July of 2025. Very popular author Steve Barry, and this is a brand new book he's come out with that is called The List. And coincidentally, our final book for the program today is by John Grisham, who was mentioned just a few minutes ago. And this also has a similar title. It is called The Judge's List. And this one, as I say, is by John Grisham. Vigorous thriller that gets out of the courtroom and into the swampier corners of the redneck Riviera. Here's the plot. Judges are supposed to dispense justice, not administer the death penalty on their own initiative. That's just what Lacey Stoltz is up against, though. The protagonist of The Whistler, she's a jaded investigator for Florida's Board on Judicial Conduct, which, thanks to budget cuts, is dying on the vine, a leaderless mess. Well, Lacey acts on complaints, and she receives a doozy from a well-put-together black woman who introduces herself as Margie, though she admits that's an alias. Her father, a much-respected professor of constitutional law, had retired to South Carolina and was murdered by an unknown killer. Now, the coldest of cold cases, his death is a link in an evidentiary chain that only Margie, her real name is Jerry Crosby, has managed to construct. The murderer, a circuit judge sitting in Pensacola, biding his time until he can cross off the next victim on a deeply personal to be avenged list. Judge Bannock has more money than God and more technological goodies than Lex Arthur, but though a psycho, he puts on a good public face. Lacey is resistant at first, given that her normal brief is to investigate complaints about drunkenness or corruption, but she allows that six murders would certainly liven up her caseload, and then some. We don't meet the killing judge until halfway through the book, and then he's a model of clinical badness in a game of cat and mouse that ends in, well, a rather frothily grisly moment. As with all his procedurals, Grisham injects professional notes on crime and justice into the proceedings. This country averages 15,000 murders a year. One-third are never solved. Since 1960, over 200,000. This is a brand new book by John Grisham. It's called The Judge's List, and it sounds like a good one. And that's all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm George Douglas. Thanks for joining me today. The program is brought to you by the State Library of Carolina, North Carolina, accessible books and library services. They can be reached at 888-388-2460. This program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time.